when you open the door for somebody else.
Welcome into the vaccine conversation with Melissa and Dr. Bob. This is a special evening episode for Melissa and I.
Like they can tell. In case you're wondering, it's evening time right now.
Well, if
they can hear it. It just sounds like nighttime.
It's either nighttime or it's very early morning, like one of our 7 a.m. episodes. Okay.
That's the funniest thing you've said all day. In case you didn't know, it's nighttime here in California and we're doing a podcast.
Funny. Well, no, we came in for this special evening because we really wanted to jump right into this topic. And because I know everyone nationwide is thrilled about what just happened in New Jersey. And so I thought, oh my gosh, we have to get someone from New Jersey on the phone to talk about it. And I reached out to a lot of people I know, and several people recommended that we talk to two women about this. And so the first one is Melanie Dragone. Is that right?
Yeah, you got it.
Hey, Melanie, welcome. Welcome to the vaccine conversation.
Thank you. It's an honor to be here.
Yeah, and you are...
I just want to hear her talk so I can hear her accent. So maybe I can pick it up for next... It's very subtle, but I'm hearing little things on it, and I just love hearing accents.
Yeah, so. Are you going to join her, Melissa? Are you
no, I'm not good at this one. This is not in my arsenal, but I love your voice, so I'll be happy to listen to all the things you have to say today.
Yeah.
Oh, thanks.
Melanie lives in New Jersey, and she has an organization, Innovative Parenting, that is a nonprofit organization, and we'll talk a little bit about that later. But Melanie was, really boots on the ground, heavily involved in this fight in New Jersey. So we wanted to kind of pick your brain a little bit and see what you could tell the rest of the country about what went down over the last month. Or, many months of this fight, but what we can all learn from it and what encouragement we can take from it and what we can learn about what to do and what not to do specifically, based on the religious exemption experience in New Jersey.
And just also, it's probably a good idea if you can for us, Melanie, kind of give a little summary of sort of what led up to this, because for some people, they might not have been following it and not been up to date on what's going on in New Jersey. So it would be good to give just a little bit of a background too, kind of summary of sort of like over the last couple of months, what's happened, what happened, laws introduced. And before we get into the last month, which was craziness and excitement and just, wow, what amazing inspiration that these parents have shown the country. I've gotten messages from people all over the country that are saying, wow, did you see what happened in New Jersey? And I think people are inspired by that fighting spirit. And I want to go into that later too, because, we've heard that, you hear that about East Coasters, and like, there's just like a different spirit. There's a little bit more grit. There's a little bit more like, we're not going down like this.
Yeah.
And it's amazing, but like that difference can turn a tide sometimes. And so that's part of it that I want to go into, but also, I mean, for just listeners that have no idea, I would love to kind of get just a brief rundown of sort of what's been happening in New Jersey.
Yeah. What was the bill? It's basically to remove religious exemption as a reason for vaccination or for exempting out of vaccinations.
Right. So originally, the bill was introduced in 2018.
Okay.
And it went through our Assembly Health Committee. And it was actually to tighten the religious exemption.
Okay.
So that occurred in April of 2018. In January 2019, the sponsor of the bill on the assembly floor amended the bill, completely gutting it.
Mm.
And that verbiage was to eliminate the religious exemption.
Hmm. So that was
a year ago.
So it went from like, oh, we're just going to kind of make this a little bit more stricter, to all of a sudden out of nowhere, they were like, no, we are gutting this bill and we're going to make it so that they're basically eliminating it.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly. And it was done on the floor. It wasn't voted on. It was only amended. So that was a year ago.
Okay.
And so for the past year, we have been boots on the ground in our local districts. There's 40 districts here in New Jersey, as well as been in Trenton, in the hallways with face-to-face contact with our legislators, and just keeping them abreast of the opposition to this bill. And it's kind of been quiet, and it in the past year, it's kind of been difficult to activate people for them to recognize what really transpired because it didn't come up for a vote at all until December 12th.
Yeah. And I think that's when we all became aware of it as a nation. And I think, you know, my understanding is basically they tried to vote on it in December, but they couldn't because they were like one vote short. Right. And then so they kind of put it on hold and they got one Democratic legislator to flip and agree to vote yes for the bill if they would amend it. So it only affected public schools. Is that right? Is that how it went down?
Well, what actually happened was Thursday, the 12th of December, there was a Senate Health Committee meeting to amend and to pass the elimination bill. And there were three Democrats that were on the committee who would have not allowed this bill to pass through committee. So the Senate president, who is determined to pass this bill, removed those three Democrats from the Health Committee. And replace them with two Democrats and himself.
And that's, you're talking about Senator Sweeney?
Senator Sweeney, yes.
And is he the author of the bill? Was he one of the authors?
He was not.
Oh.
No, but he's the president of the Senate or the Senate majority leader. Yeah, so that's amazing. I mean, something similar happened in California, but not that drastic. You know, you're saying they removed three Democratic senators who were going to vote against this in committee. Replace it with himself and two that would vote for it. That's
we had them remove one on a health committee also, the same kind of thing, and some people switching out on the education committee member for 277. Right. So we saw some of that stuff too. Yeah. But wait, I want to make sure that I'm clear on this. So back in January of 2019, when they amended it, nothing was passed. There was no real vote. So it was just amended, but never
just
voted
amended.
On. So the language had changed and it was sort of in the system, but it hadn't gone into action yet. Because there had not been a vote. So you're saying that's why it was kind of hard to get people riled up between that January and December, which is almost the entire year, because people didn't understand the gravity of what was sitting there just waiting to be voted on.
Exactly. And what happened was after November, we had an election in November. What we call now between the November election and yesterday or a Monday is the lame duck season. And that's when the legislators have the opportunity to push bills through quickly in that lame duck season. So as soon as lame duck season began, this bill came back.
Comes up for a vote at that point. Then they're bringing it up for a vote. Okay, that makes sense. Now I feel like I understand the kind of the timeline now. And you said December 12th, it comes to a vote. And then what happens
that's
on that
day? That's the Senate. Right. So that's the Senate Health Committee. So it gets through the Senate Health Committee, despite many parents being present, many testimonies being given. It passes, of course, because they literally played fantasy football with the members of the Health Committee.
Right.
Yeah.
So then we come back on Monday, the 16th. And that is when the full assembly and the full Senate now have it slated on their agenda to vote on it.
Because it's on the floor.
Right. And that's when they were sure to vote then.
Yes. So it passed the assembly with the elimination version.
Okay.
With the expectation that the Senate had the votes and was going to be passing it the same day. However, they did not have the votes on the 16th. So they ended up pulling it from the agenda and never even posting the bill. Voting on it.
Right. And so 16th. you guys all had a break then for
the holiday.
For the holiday and everything. Like
somewhat.
Knowing
full well that you'd be back, was it January 9th?
Or was it the 13th? I don't know. Did anything happen the week before?
I remember seeing everybody saying, get ready, January 9th, we're back.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah, so we were back. And what had happened and transpired in almost that month's time was all of us doing our due diligence, having those conversations, you know, showing up at district offices to meet with legislators, connecting with one another. We were instrumental in creating what we're calling Twitter storms, something that my organization kind of spearheaded for New Jersey was we were putting out memes and informational pieces to, and tagging all the legislators in the Twitter storms and then sharing those links with New Jersey citizens so that they could retweet it. So we were doing our best to try to get our points across the legislators. As frequently and as much as we could. And so on the 9th, we go back, and what had happened was the bill was amended to appease a Republican senator, not a Democrat.
It was a Republican. Okay. Huh. Right.
And that's the same Republican senator that insisted to speak to some healthcare professionals from our side and some other professionals from our side. And we were able to create those meetings and bring those professionals in to have those conversations with him. And it didn't matter.
So when it was amended, what was the language change?
Well, wasn't it to make it just in only apply to public schools mainly?
Well, that's what I'm asking her. Well, yeah. Let's find out,
I
Melanie.
Don't think so.
this is really like buckle your seatbelts because this language change was very interesting. And I want to make sure that everyone listening understands that each one of these versions of the bill included higher education. So in essence, New Jersey would be the first state in the whole country to mandate adult vaccinations.
Wow.
Adult being college age?
Yeah.
Higher education.
Yeah, college, graduate school, everything. Wow.
Okay. Yep. So this bill was amended to not include private schools. So you were allowed to use, they were no longer calling it religious exemption. It would allow the non-compliant students to attend a private school. Those private schools would have to have a sign at their entrance indicating the percentage of vaccine-free children.
Wow.
You would have to sign a documentation, you and all the other parents who would be, utilizing that private school, that you understood that this school had this percentage of vaccine-free children. You would also, as the parent of the vaccine-free child, you would have to sign something indicating basically that you were putting your child and every other human on earth at risk. The medical exemption was also changed in this version of the bill. The medical exemption would be accepted if a sibling of a child who experienced an adverse reaction or death and was compensated by the Vaccine Injury Compensation Program.
Wow.
That child would be automatically given a medical exemption.
Yeah, but that really narrows it down to
you're saying
a small number of New Jersey
citizens. It would only
citizens.
Be compensated vaccine injuries, sibling of those only.
Yeah.
Okay.
Only.
So let me ask you something before you continue, because you're talking about vaccine-free children. What was their qualification for that? What if you had half of the doses but missed only a couple of the doses from what was being required? Would they just, put that blanket statement of you are a vaccine-free child because you're missing doses? Or how would they qualify that? That's one of my big arguments, because a lot of times when you hear somebody say, get your kids vaccinated, I'm always like, well, what does that mean? Like, how many doses are okay according to the school system, according to the government, according to the public, whatever? What are the number of doses? If my kid has had 30 doses but not 32, and they're missing two of them, and I'm choosing to do a religious exemption and go to a private school in New Jersey, and I have to go through the steps that you're saying now, where I have a non-compliant child who's considered vaccine-free with this language. Is that how it works? Because most people, as we found out and we've talked about, most kids are partially vaccinated, like the vast majority. So are they just considering anybody who's missing even a dose under that category as vaccine-free?
It wasn't clear in the bill. So I really can't answer that. And, these were a lot of the questions that we as the citizens of New Jersey were posing. We were asking the legislators, you need to answer these questions of your constituents before you vote on this bill. What's going to happen to the child who has an IEP? where the schools in New Jersey that are private do not have the ability to accommodate the needs of a special needs child. You know, what happens if I can't afford private school?
Right. Yeah.
This,
of course.
This bill essentially is like socioeconomically and religiously discriminatory.
Right. Of course.
Yeah.
And so it became like a bad bill of elimination to an ugly bill with the amendments.
And do you think that ended up helping you guys? Is that what contributed to them not going to a vote?
I believe so. I mean,
because it got so complicated. I mean, at this point now, this
complicated. Yeah. Right. And also just really like, you know, elitist for the most part.
Yeah, of course.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I do want to mention that currently in the state of New Jersey, private schools do not have to accept religious exemption, and many don't.
Right. Hmm. They can each decide for themselves, is what you're saying.
Right, exactly. Wow. So literally, they were setting us up, you know, as a community to be shunned by peers and create mommy wars, basically.
Yeah.
I mean, it would bother me so much if my child had everything but missing, let's say, a hepatitis B dose. And if I had to sign documentation saying that my vaccine, quote unquote, vaccine-free child was putting themselves at risk and other children at risk. And that school was publishing this percentage, which is not even representative of the actual coverage for individual illnesses. Like, that would really bother me because it feels like that's misrepresentation. Like, you're forced to say one thing when that might not even be your case. And it, like we said, with data we've seen, it's like, you know, between 50 and 80% of kids are vaccinated for the communicable diseases that most people are worried about.
Yeah.
And to have to claim that you've had nothing, you have no protection, now you're risk, you know, putting everybody at risk would be really difficult as a parent. For me, I would have a hard time accepting that.
It's the same thing that most pediatricians ask non-compliant parents to sign in the pediatrician's office. Yeah, I call it the bad parent form, you know, is what they, is really what it is, or what it looks like. And yeah, and we hear a lot of parents refuse to sign that.
We know what's so hard about this is how different every state is. So you're here telling us that private schools don't have to accept religious exemptions because that's the way that the law was written in New Jersey, and in California it's different. And then some laws are removing exemptions only for public schools. Some are for doing it for public and private schools. Some have medical exemptions with strict restrictions. Some don't. The fact that this varies so much state to state, I think, really makes it complicated for everybody because this is a national conversation, and it's one that the media is having as if everything's the same. So the media talks about it like it's all universal, but it's really not. Every single, and so the citizens are the ones that don't know their individual laws. They don't know these ins and outs.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I wouldn't have known these details about New Jersey, obviously, before speaking with you, because this isn't my state and I haven't had to go into it. But I can see how that's difficult to get people riled up. Like you're saying, a lot of people don't even know who's going to be affected, who this is going to be discriminating against, which people, you know, are the ones that are going to be targeted with this kind of legislation. Like, people don't know the ins and outs. And I almost feel like they're making this complicated on purpose. They make this stuff difficult.
Oh, yeah.
So you can't digest it easily.
Right. And in California, the way it works is the bill was so confusing and complicated, they passed it anyway. And they're leaving it up to the public health department to interpret it and decide how to enforce or not enforce all these, you know, confusing aspects of the bill.
And the school district, same thing. They're all like interpreting it differently
because
this is so complicated. So with this new language, then it comes out and it causes this big stir. And then do you guys come at it even harder now once this language gets changed?
Oh, absolutely. That, you know, our messaging changed. Everything changed at that point because now we were dealing with, you know, it's apples to oranges, basically. And we really made an effort to point out the discrepancies between, you know, how, the white upper middle class might be able to swing this and how it was really going to be an issue for people of color in the lower socioeconomic communities. And this was causing segregation only and because they were going to be moving our children, but also segregation because many people could not swing what they were asking of New Jersey citizens.
And what was your messaging before? Before this, what were your main points that you guys were trying to drive to legislators and the public?
Well, before, you know, we stuck to the religious aspect of it because this was a religious exemption bill. So we spoke to the facts, you know, aborted fetal tissue, that this was a violation of constitutional and First Amendment rights. And with the New Jersey Constitution, religion, as reflected in the Constitution, is your relationship with God, mm-hmm. and that it doesn't necessarily need to be an organized religion, which is, you know, a mistake that a lot of legislators make, that there's no organized religion that recognizes vaccination as, a negative.
But that's not what New Jersey law and the Constitution says, that it has to be.
Right.
Right. Interesting. And did you find legislators would actually stop and listen and think about the points you're making and try to process it? Or, do you feel like you actually changed people's minds with those arguments? Or do you think it was mostly just the politics of it and they're just going to kind of do whatever their party is going to tell them to do? How much of a difference was all this time spent with crafting all these important specific arguments?
You know, I'm not really sure, how effective it was. I think it's important to point out that New Jersey, I've been doing advocacy here in New Jersey for over a decade, and we have very, very strong grassroots efforts. Mm. So we, for years, have been meeting with legislators in their offices, mm-hmm. in the halls of Trenton, randomly, not necessarily even when a bill is up.
Right.
We are attending political events where we're like, hey, we're here, we paid to come in, we're
staying present.
Showing up.
Yeah, you're staying present in front of their face. You're reminding them you're still there, you're not going anywhere. And what you said is so key, not just when a bill is happening. That's the big difference. Yeah. It's like you have to be there all the time. You can't just show up when you want something from them. You have to be there and have that consistent presence. And that's definitely something that I think we struggled with in California between the last two bills that, 4 years apart, is like being able to keep that presence there. That sounds like, from what I'm hearing from you, that sounds like definitely something you guys were able to do well. Even over that year in 2019, you're saying we're still going and showing up at district offices. We're still going and meeting with legislators in Trenton. You were doing, like you said, your due diligence. And in doing that, you're maintaining relationships. You're also putting mm-hmm. that pressure on, and you're keeping the public, the advocates, constantly working and constantly busy. There's no downtime. It's not like people can get out of it for a bit. Like, you're keeping this as part of the deal. And unfortunately, I hate to say it, but when you're up against this type of lobby and this type of industry and this type of media bias that we see, the only thing we have are people, the public. That's the only thing we have. And if we're not milking that consistently, and I think our generation is a little bit lazy, we just don't know what it's like to have to work for advocacy. Like, people have never really had to advocate for things in most people my age in their whole entire life. They've never had to be an advocate for something.
Right.
And so having to show up at 7 a.m, having to be outside in the cold, having to do this time and time again, and then go home and research at night when your kids are sleeping, and then go up and do it all over again. Mm. It's exhausting.
Does it sound familiar, Melanie?
It does. It definitely does. And I think that, to your point, Melissa, that, all the advocacy that we've done, all that like groundwork that had been done, I want to emphasize that it wasn't by the thousands of people that showed up recently in the last, four times in Trenton.
Right.
It was, it was key people. It was whoever I could fit in my car that was willing to come.
Yeah.
I had my senator tell me in June that he thought I was in Trenton more than he was. Mm. And that's what we want. Every time I see him, I'm like, I'm back, I'm here. Mm.
Well,
not going away.
Yeah. I mean, we always need those key leaders that are willing to put in the time on a continuous basis. But then we also need the masses to show up when it's important. And I'm curious, how many, do you guys have a good count of maybe what the largest number of people that showed up on, maybe if it was this past Monday in Trenton, what was the actual number?
Well, according to the police that were present, it was about 3,500.
Wow. That's more. Yeah. I mean, what was the most we ever had, Melissa, here in California? 1,000?
I think we've had more than that, but of course it's a bigger state. So relatively speaking, having 3,500 people come to one location,
that is amazing.
That kind of pressure is a visual reminder of, and I hope, to legislators to understand who is in control here, that people are going to start waking up. And, you know, we struggled with this with our last two different bills, like I said, is this idea that people have to start taking the government back. They have to start getting involved.
Yes.
They have to start getting involved locally on the district level and the state level. People have to start keeping their legislators accountable. And we've been letting them like pass, you know, 1,000 bills every single season and nobody even knowing what's being passed. And it's just happening under our noses and nobody's really aware of anything. And we just kind of have all been blind to it all until it affects us. But this is such a good reminder of like how we have to be present all the time. And this can no longer happen ever again in our lives. This can never happen again where we are not involved and we are there and our faces are in front of these people.
How did you get so many people to show up that day? What's the secret?
I think that we do have core people in 40 in each of the 40 districts in New Jersey. So, and there's multiple organizations here in New Jersey and we all kind of play a different role and work together to you know, activate our people. So, you know, we have people in each of the districts who then have members that live in those districts who, you know, those leaders activated those people. That's the New Jersey Coalition for Vaccination Choice. That's how what they oversee. My organization is more of a macro public organization where I'm getting information out on social media, you know, through Twitter, through Facebook, through Instagram. And I really think that people were just talking to one another and were able to connect with the right people and showed up like we never, ever imagined. I have to say that in the, you know, the decade that I've been doing advocacy, I walked in to the state house and I was in tears because no one ever beats me there. No, the cafe where we always meet was never full with my people the way that it was when we started. So
it's
been amazing.
Yeah, there's a recent article they're going to refer to, you know, written by Luis Cuo Habacas.
You probably butchered that name. That sounds awful. I'm sure her name does not sound like that at all.
How do you say her name?
Yes, Luis Cuo Habacas.
Okay, cool.
She said it much better.
Well, she makes the point that until we show the politicians our numbers, politicians will follow the money. And so if you deliver a mass of voting humanity to the legislators, you will watch the lawmakers turn to the thronging horde like flowers to the sun. And, you know, so, people, and she says people moved mountains in New Jersey to be there. They took vacation time, hired babysitters, they drove long distances. And politicians will really see orders of magnitude more voters than who's actually there because they know there's so many people aren't even going to make it. And that really makes a difference.
Oh, absolutely. And that was our messaging. Our messaging was the days that we weren't going to be able to testify, right? When it was the full floor days, our presence was our voice. So you needed to be there because that's how they were going to know that we were not backing down, that we were rising up and that we were not going to allow our children's lives to be shattered.
And it seems like from what I could tell, the media was covering this issue more than really we see in California. It seems like that was another way to kind of alert the public to what was going on, which probably helped you guys. Because I feel like I've seen a lot of articles, a lot of attention brought to the battle, the fight for this. And I think that for, like I said, the average person, if they didn't know what was happening, you know, by seeing it in the media, they're like, oh my gosh, this is what's going on. I got to get down there on this date and go be a part of this. That you know, we don't get a lot of media support in this. But even just drawing attention to it, even though they weren't supporting it, I think from what I gathered, might have given you guys some more visibility, which really helped because everybody sort of knew what was going on. This was getting covered, even though, you know, New Jersey is small. It's like, but it was being covered. And so that all that attention, I think, also brought a little bit of steam to you guys. Does that seem right?
Yeah. It definitely, a lot of the state troopers and a lot of the legislators that are our champions and our friendlies indicated to us that in the time that they've been at the state house, that they've never seen the outpouring of rally protesters like ours. Yeah. And I really think that the media has helped us, and they're calling us protesters and not anti-vaxxers.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah, that actually is. People don't realize how important the little word change can be.
I would like to know, Melissa was in Sacramento on that very final day where we lost our vote, and she lived that and felt it, and it was so palpable and such a deep experience. I was probably going to stay with you the rest of your life, Melissa, being in the Sacramento Capitol building, pounding the walls and making noise and trying to make yourselves heard. You know, Melanie, I'm curious, where were you that last day on Monday, and standing around and, you know, waiting for the vote that never came? You guys are just waiting, you know, what was that like? You know, how loud was it? What were people doing? Can I try to paint us a picture of what you saw around you?
Yeah, so I was inside. I was actually in the assembly session, where the main sponsor of the bill, was the Assemblyman Conaway. He was in that room, and simultaneously, the Senate session was going on. And us here in New Jersey have used some communication tools to stay connected in Trenton for day of events. So we have chats where we're able to connect with one another. And so we're all keeping each other abreast of what was going on. They simultaneously took a break, a recess, and we were like, what are they doing? What's happening? What's going on? And I just stayed in my seat and waited. And we knew that the Senate only had 4 bills left after their recess. So, all of a sudden, we were getting messages from the Senate side that they had, you know, they banged the gavel and it was over.
Wow.
So
what happened? Did everyone erupt in cheers? Yes. And
so everyone erupted in cheers. Those of us who were in the assembly, that was, you know, the assembly session that was still going on, we ran over to the Senate session to meet all of our peers who were over there, and we could hear the roars from outside. It was incredible.
I bet it was. I bet that must have been. Really was. You know, we're so used to, it sounds bad, we're so used to losing. We're so used to like losing that even moments like that, they feel like a victory. And even if you know it's coming back, and even if you know that they're going to try to push this, it's sometimes you just need that. You need the victory. You need that to encourage people to be able to keep going, because we just have too much. It's too exhausting, and and we're all overwhelmed, and we're not funded, and we don't have, you know, like everybody else. And we don't like the pharmaceutical companies. Like, we don't have the resources and we're all doing a million jobs all at once. And there's only so much you can do, that it's like, sometimes you just need to feel like we had a victory in this moment, and that just gives you new life to want to come back and continue fighting. And even that bit of a victory for you guys feels like a victory for the rest of the states too.
Yes.
And that's what they need to keep fighting. But you're saying it's not over yet, because something happened even after that. Let us know what happened.
So on Tuesday, the new session started for New Jersey. So the 2020 session started. So we have 2-year sessions. Mm-hmm. And reemerged is the amended version of the bill that they're calling now S-902 and A-969. So they were just assigned new numbers. Mm-hmm. But that bill has returned, along with a few other bills that are very concerning. You know, an HPV bill for grades 6 through 12, a bill that would allow consent of a 14-year-old or older to consent to vaccination.
Yeah.
So, you know, those are things that all of us need to be concerned about, not just parents who maybe currently don't want to vaccinate. But
how do you find the energy to keep fighting, knowing that even when you score a major victory, like we did on Monday, the very next day it starts all over again? How do you cope? How do you find the energy, Melanie?
This is my passion.
Yeah.
12 years ago, Louise Kuo Habakus, who's my mentor, was giving a presentation about her vaccine injured boys. And that presentation changed my life and saved my children.
Wow.
So I've been since then, forever indebted to Louise for being so brave, and all of the moms who have vaccine injured children who tell their stories.
Right.
I am paying it forward. And that's what keeps me going, is because every conversation and all the people and all the families and children that I've then saved over the years is why I do this. And I wouldn't have it any other way.
Yeah.
Well, I know you're inspiring other people by, it's just amazing how this works as a cycle, right? You're inspired by Louise, and then you get into work that's inspiring other people, and then they get involved and they inspire other people. And this is exactly how it happens. It's like a domino effect. And this is why all the parents that sit back and think, well, that's not me, or I don't have the skills to be doing this, or I've never been involved in politics. It's like, it doesn't matter. Just jump straight in, get both of your feet in, and start doing. And your doing will encourage other people to do. And the more doing that we see will actually turn into something. And it's like, people have to understand, you just have to be an average person, a parent. You know, you'd be surprised at the skill sets everybody has from their professional backgrounds and whatever life experience they've had that come into play here. You don't have to be a certain thing or a perfect thing, or it doesn't have to be a perfect time for it to happen. People need to do it now. I'm so sick of people waiting on the sidelines thinking, well, somebody else is going to do it. It's like, well, nobody else is going to do it. People are doing it out of desperation, and everybody needs to get in there, because there are times when, as a, you know, quote unquote leader, you need that support. And there are times you need to just take a little break for a little bit, and you need people stepping up. You can't rely on the same few handful of people to be running stuff all the time. It's, there's only so much you can do. And now you're inspired to keep doing it because of your own personal, you know, Louise being inspiring you, and this has become your passion. But even you, I'm sure, you get exhausted, you get tired, you get overworked and overwhelmed. And this is why we rely on everybody else. And, you know, to all the people that are listening thinking, oh, well, it's so great. You know, I know that they can do it. They can do it. It's like, so can you. So can you. We were all just like you back before we got involved too.
Yeah.
And this is the time to come find your strength, find the abilities you didn't even know that you had, and make this your passion too, and get involved like on a deeper level. Don't just do the periphery stuff. You know, don't just show up, like you're saying, don't just show up on the big days. Be there throughout the year too. Help build the relationships, help become educated, and help get yourself up to date with the messaging points and how to convey them well, and get over your fears and nerves and all the things that are preventing people from doing this. The only way you're going to do it is by actually showing up and doing it. And I think that you're inspiring people to do that, and you've already been inspired, and that will keep happening. And I just want to keep seeing that all over, you know, different countries, all the different states. I just want to see that same thing replicated. And I think the biggest point that you made, you're obviously very well versed on the language of the bill and the messaging, which is so important. And I think people forget about that. It's not about your own belief systems. It's about getting on board with what the messaging is to be the most effective, so that we have this unified opposition. But what you said that I think probably stands out the most to me is that it's all about consistent presence and developing those relationships, getting into district offices, showing up to the political events, making sure you are visible at all times, because I can guarantee you, parents on the pro side of these types of mandates are not showing up to these things, because I don't ever see these super, super pro mandate parents organizing rallies and things. It's not happening. You know,
not yet.
But I mean, it's a handful of people that really believe so strongly on that side. I think most of America is a lot more in the middle than the media would like you to believe.
Absolutely.
So you don't see all those people coming. So like you said, the police said to you guys, just not ever witnessing that type of opposition. They said the same thing to us in California that day, September 9th. They said the same thing. We've never seen this kind of presence ever at the Capitol for any issue.
Yeah.
For any issue. Yeah. And you think, how can that happen? And they still pass it the other way. Yeah. Even after seeing that kind, all those parents showing up and testify and all that whole thing. So you just have to keep doing it, just like we have to keep doing it. Everybody has to keep doing it.
Melanie, your mentor, Louise, she writes, are you looking for a hero in this movement? You just need to look in the mirror. You know, that hero is you. It's each one of you out there.
Yeah. I mean, we are the change that we want to see in the world, right? And I
recognize that lyric.
Well, it's a well-known phrase.
Well, no, that's in our
Yeah.
Our theme song.
Yes, I know. Yeah. And it's so true. And I have to speak to what you said, Melissa, because what I observed in the last 40 days regarding each and every New Jersey citizen is exactly what you're talking about. Everyone put their heads down and did exactly what they needed to do. They went out of their comfort zone and talked to people they would have never talked to. They outed themselves. The people that no one ever knew their children were vaccine free or partially vaccinated or had vaccine injury. Those people were talking to their neighbors. People met with superintendents, with mayors. Like they remembered that their uncle's sister's cousin knew the senator, and they made that phone call. Like, everyone did everything possible without being prompted by a leader, quote unquote. So that was just like
that's
extraordinary.
Fantastic. Yeah,
it was. It really.
Well, I think people forget that the lobbyists do this as a full-time job. So they're making all those phone calls as part of their 9-to-5.
Right. Yeah.
And the rest of us, we have 9-to-5s. And some of us have 2 of those. So the idea of being able to spend your whole day going, who can I call? And let me talk to this mayor. And this guy I went to high school with is actually working for Congressman so-and-so. This is not part of our jobs because we all have other jobs and kids and this whole thing. But the other side, they're milking those relationships because they're paying people to do that full-time. So that puts us at a huge disadvantage because they're working those relationships. And if they only hear from that guy 5 times and they only hear from us once, you know, it's going to be a little easier for them to side in that direction.
Yeah. And that's why it's so critical to form these relationships. As you both have said, you have to form relationships with your legislators. I'm starting to form a relationship with our Democratic congressman where I live, because I know that's going to matter. Melanie, we're going to let you go and get to bed. It's 3 hours later where you are, and we appreciate you staying up with us. I want to know how people can find you through Innovative Parenting. What is your website?
Our website is innovativeparentingevent.com.
Okay.
And we also, for those of you who are in New Jersey and want to be kept up to date on New Jersey advocacy efforts, you can text 313131. With the message NJSHF.
Okay. NJSHF to that number. Okay. Mm-hmm. We will put those links on the summary part of this podcast episode. So people will be able to get that.
Thank you.
And people can find it on our where we always put our resources for each show. So people will definitely be able to connect with you.
What about an advocacy group for New Jersey? Where is the place that other people from that area can join outside of what your nonprofit is for medical freedom advocacy? Is there a main group that you have in New Jersey that would be for them where they go to join? Or a couple of them?
I mean, there are a couple of them. The main one is New Jersey Coalition for Vaccination Choice. And I work hand in hand with them and a few of the other organizations here in New Jersey. And so if you get filtered through me, I then filter you through to them.
Okay.
Oh, perfect.
That's how this works. So we're all, have one objective and one goal. So we're working together to achieve that.
Well, you guys are doing a great job. I love how professional and organized you are. I'm a little jealous, to be honest, because, we have 120 districts, which is 3 times what you guys have. And it's like, to be able to do what you're doing, it would be so amazing to replicate that, to triple that and be able to be so efficient over California. It's just so big and there's so much space and it's so hard to cover everything and do things the way that textbook and theory that you want to do and that's effective. And so seeing your example is, I'm a little envious because you guys have the ability to do that, because that's how you can be effective and impactful. And hopefully the other states that are dealing with, districts around your size and are smaller, they have no excuse. They have no excuse not to be able to handle things the way that you guys are handling it. And hopefully you'll even inspire us here in California to kind of get on that a little more and kind of use it as a model. Cause I think what you're doing is great. And I so appreciate you taking the time to talk with us on the vaccine conversation.
Oh, thank you guys for having me. And I'll send you links to all the New Jersey organizations so you can post them.
Yeah, and we look forward to seeing you, Melanie, hopefully in our podcasting tour in the Northwest somewhere.
Oh, awesome. Yay.
Yeah, we will definitely be hitting either New York or New Jersey for sure.
Yeah.
So fantastic.
You'll have to come meet us.
Or both.
Yes.
Both. I don't know. We'll see.
Well, let me know and I can help you promote it here. Yeah, I'd be happy to help you get the word out. Absolutely.
That sounds amazing.
Well, thanks, Melanie. We appreciate you being on, and we'll hopefully meet you someday.
Okay, great. Thank you, guys. Yeah. Have a great night.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Well, that was so great to be able to talk to somebody who was out there when all this went down and somebody who was very intimately involved with
for 12
with the
years,
whole battle.
Too. So she's been doing this for a long time.
That's amazing. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, we appreciate hearing Melanie's experience. And, you know, what happened in New Jersey has given me so much excitement and energy. And it's really, I think, reinvigorated everybody, knowing that these victories are possible. And this was a major victory, if hopefully not a temporary one, because they're going to keep fighting this. But
we're going to continue this discussion on New Jersey with another interview.
Yeah, we are talking to somebody else in New Jersey next, and we're going to hear her perspective. And we're also going to talk about a very interesting article that kind of, I think, highlights a lot of the main take-home messages that we've learned from New Jersey. So we'll give you the next episode on that. But thanks, you guys, for tuning in on the Vaccine Conversation. And we will see you next time.
The information in this podcast is for entertainment purposes only. It is not intended as medical advice. Always consult your healthcare professional for information on vaccines and infectious diseases.